Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of our listeners all over the world. I'm Barry Miller, your Breadband podcast host. I have today James Abraham, the CEO of Sandler Israel, here with us to talk about sales training, sales discovery, sales, I guess even problems in sales orgs and how to resolve those issues. James comes from the sales space, but we'll also talk about how that connects to RevOps and also some of the issues that RevOps deals with and how to resolve that. So James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Barry. Great to be here.
My pleasure. Really excited to have you. So James, I just said what your title is. Maybe you could expand a bit more what Sandler does and about your experience at Sandler and even before then, if relevant.
Sure, with pleasure. So Sandler is the world's largest sales performance training company. We focus on three main areas, sales performance and anything to do around that. So prospecting, driving sales, customer success. The second pillar is management success, and third is leadership excellence. So around those three areas, Sandler has been helping a myriad of companies over the years really kind of break through glass ceilings, set in good methodology, good process, and drive opportunities across the finish line in a controlled manner.
Cool. Great. So there's a lot of places we can go. One thing that I want to start off with just based on your intro, methodology, processes. This RevOps and salespeople can discuss. People always argue, oh, this is a method, this is a process, this is something else. What's the difference? What is a methodology? What is a process? What is operations? Help us discern it.
Yeah. So a lot of people ask me, James, how do you get into this type of business? So I'm 48 and I've been in sales since I was 10 years old. And about 7 years that no one had process. Everyone was winging it. And I decided I wanted to do something about it. And basically then I made the decision to bring Sandler to Israel. I bought the rights to Israel and became the exclusive delivery for Sandler here. And I think the number one issue I see when I go into companies is that they don't have a real sales methodology. They kind of wing it. They have a process. They have a way of doing things. It might be some process that they've set up in their CRM or sales operations is done for them, which is okay. It's kind of intuitive. It might be based on some old-fashioned stuff. It might even be based on how the CRM implementation kind of went, and they said, "Okay, let's just leave it that way and just hope everyone will adjust." Here's the thing. Now, when I come into companies, I don't usually change what they do. What we do, and what that's the whole idea of good, strong, powerful sales performance training, is let's pretend you have a process, right? What I do is I come in and I give you a selling system. And it's not, and once we're able to overlay those two and combine them, what you then get is a methodology. So you have the sales process, you bring in, you put on a selling system, and then you get methodology. The thing is that we're dealing with human beings. Sales professionals are in the behavior business. They're not in the selling business. And I think that's another misconception. It's not about the technique they know. It's about how they use the technique and if they use the technique, when they use the technique. And so if you think a little bit about those components, process, a selling system, which brings methodology, then what we need to do is we need to give our people the ability to execute that. How do we do that? By teaching them technique. Now, here's another misconception. While taking that technique, everyone wants sales training, and you have enablement teams, and you have this, and they do an offsite here and an offsite there and a kickoff and all those things. Great. The problem is that once they're trained, nothing really changes because they go back to their old ways. And the idea of strong methodology and embedding it in an organization requires the implementation of reinforcement. So very similar to the way I tell my clients, I'm not a hospital, I'm not a clinic, this is a gym. You know, sales professionals need to constantly work on themselves, need to constantly reinforce themselves in order to stick to that methodology. And it's not what they do that's important. Well, that is important, but it's how they do it. So it's not what they ask. It's how they ask. It's not what they do. It's how they do it and how they execute and how they drive opportunities through the funnel, how they qualify, how they present, and of course, how they close, not what they do to close. It's how they do it. And so I think that's the big, big difference. And I think that will start to clear up that misconception regards process, system, methodology, and so on. A methodology is a process with a selling system embedded onto it. And that's my world, and that's what we bring to the table.
Okay, cool. So, like, I'm not a sales guy, but if a process, meaning, like, in general, like, oh, if you sell, if you have to change the qualification once you get to this stage, so that would be a process, but once you add more explanation, then it becomes a methodology. That's a very simple example, but is that kind of what you're telling
me? I mean, at the end of the day, most companies I go into and, you know, we see what they're doing and I ask them how do you qualify around here? And they say, well, you know, we ask a couple of questions, we do some BANT, which is completely, you know, out of date. And usually what they're doing is that they're doing it at an earlier stage, which is not, they're not really getting the real answers, the truth. They're not getting the truth. And so at the end of the day, yes, it's really knowing, you know, what to ask, how to ask it, and how deep you go in. I think another thing that you might, that might be common to the listeners of this podcast, is, especially if you're a manager out there listening to this, they might notice that their sales professionals are not thorough enough. They're qualifying easy. And then it's difficult for them to close deals. And then they have to give up margins. They have to discount. They have to give away all this other stuff just to get a deal. When in fact, what they should be doing is qualifying heavily, qualifying strong, asking very tough questions, looking to actually disqualify the prospect in order to find the gold out there that do really have compelling pain and are willing to pay the price in order to get, make sure that pain goes away and never comes back to bother them ever again.
Yep. The doing the hard things of sales, I guess. And that makes, and for me, that makes a lot of sense. So it's easier said than done, though. And that's, I guess, what you talk about, the reinforcement and the processes and the methodologies to make sure that people actually do it, even if in theory they agree, to make sure that they actually execute.
Listen, I think sales is probably one of the best professions out there, right? We get to do what we want. Right. We get to talk to people, help them solve problems. We get to ask the toughest questions. We build good relationships. We decide if they're qualified or not. But if you think a little bit about it, most sales professionals are not really trained to do the job the way they should be doing it. It's an easy role to get into. It's an easy role to get out of. It's an easy role to move from company to company. And in most cases, what is happening is we're not getting enough of that support from management, from operations, from enablement, and from leadership. And so at the end of the day, sales professionals, in my opinion, should have the knowledge and the skill sets to be the best at what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. I love that. So let's talk about, before the podcast, we pressed the record button. We were telling about a few stories, a few scenarios. Maybe you could walk us through maybe an interesting story or a funny story or a story that you keep on seeing over and over when you talk to CEOs about some of their sales and how to fix them, either during the sales pitch or after they become a client. I'm curious if you tell a different story after they become a client.
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm not offending anyone by saying this, but it does happen quite a bit that I get invited into companies. CEOs invite me in, sometimes VP sales, CROs, and we have a conversation. And CROs, CEOs say, you know, James, you have these sales issues. What do you think? What do you say? And I tell them, well, I'm going to ask you some questions. And, you know, we have a nice conversation. And after the end of the meeting, usually I turn around to them and say, look, how can I tell you without offending you that I don't think you have a sales problem? And they say, what do you mean? I said, well, I think that the sales problem, I mean, would you be surprised if I told you that I think the sales problem is just a symptom of the real problem? And you know, they say, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I don't want to offend you, God forbid, but I don't think you have a sales problem. I think you have a leadership issue. And the sales problem is just the symptom of the real problem. Now, those problems that I find usually, they go along the lines of recruitment issues, hiring the wrong people, being fast to hire, slow to fire. And simply because they need to get some seats in the some butts in the seats, and I get that, and they need to get people on the phones and so on. There's a lot of pressure, emotional pressure from leadership. HR are not qualifying their sales professionals well enough. And then what happens is they're hiring people that might have been in the same role over and over and over again for a few years, and they're basically just moving from company to company, doing absolutely the same, bringing the same mediocre results. So a lot of recruitment issues that we see, we can solve, but a lot of times that's not something that people want to admit that they're making a mistake over. Other stuff we find is with everything to do with filling up the top of the funnel. I'll say this, and again, this is a CEO conversation. Most CEOs I meet, their number one problem is that they have a weak funnel. And some of them say we have a full funnel, but the funnel isn't full of great opportunities. It's just full of fluff. It ain't going anywhere. And so when you look at the top of funnel of most companies, some companies do it well. They understand that there's a strong balance between marketing and sales development. They understand that there's a strong, strong correlation between a new business and new logos and expanding their enterprises or expanding the accounts that they're in, getting referrals and building off from different angles. Some are not aware, and that's also okay. And I think most companies have a comfort zone when it comes to this stuff. No one's really, you know, willing to take, I'd say, a little bit of a risk and try something new because they're not really sure if it will, you know, basically eat out what they've done up until now. So, you know, these are the type of things I see. And at the end of the day, I think from a sales leadership perspective, it can be very frustrating for most sales leaders because sales leaders don't go to sales leadership school. Mostly, I mean.
Right.
Unless they've worked with us. So, I mean.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So it seems that it was two main issues. It's HR and then funnel. Would there be any, are there any other issues like maybe?
Oh, great. Yeah. And I'll get invited in, tell me they got closing issues. We're not closing enough business, they tell me. Oh, I said, really? Tell me more about that. I said, oh, we're doing everything. We're perfect. Everything's well. You know, we're opening the door, we're building a relationship, we're showing value, we're doing everything. We just have a little bit of a closing problem. You know, how can I tell you without offending, Mr. CEO, if I was, you know, I don't think you have a closing problem. I think you have a process problem that's leading to a closing problem. And so these are other issues that we find quite a lot. Again, all can be solved. All can be solved if opportunities are qualified well enough. And I think I'm going to go back to that HR and recruitment part. Because what I find at the end of the day is that you have sales reps that are coming in with a lot of good intentions. Having said that, they're not actually delivering the sizzle simply because either one, they don't know how to do it. They haven't been taught well. Or two, they have a lot of belief issues and baggage that they're carrying with them that are holding them back. For example, if you have a company, and I don't know if there's one out there that this sounds familiar, got a company, you have some leads coming in from marketing, you have some inbound stuff, but people are not really picking up the phone. They should be, they can, they got a phone next to them, they can get some numbers, but they're not, just not doing it. Other situations where you have CSMs, this is very, you know, it's very popular to talk about customer success these days. Customer success are probably the best salespeople out there because no one suspects them. They've had their salesperson with a mask on. Not only can they upsell and it's 7 times cheaper to get business from a current client than to bring in a new client, but also they have access to enterprise. They can get referrals. There's just so much they could be doing in order to increase revenue. But what we find is what they're doing is they're mostly gravitating towards putting out fires, fixing problems, because they simply don't know how to grow revenue from their function. And that really breaks down to some elements when it comes to sales professionals. Do you want to talk about that? Like 5 weaknesses of salespeople?
Let's do it.
All right. So here are the 5 weaknesses of salespeople. Number one, ambition and drive. And if there's anyone out there listening to this and you're a sales leader and you ask your salespeople or you're hiring a salesperson, you ask them, what is your level of ambition and drive from a scale of 1 to 10? What will they say?
10.
Absolutely. I mean, have you ever met anyone that said less? But is it really a 10? What do we need to figure out in order to understand what motivates this person? Some people are just not cut for consultative sales. They're just not made of the material. And some people are not made for account sales. And we have to figure that out because that will affect their performance and top line revenue, right? Number two, sales professionals need to be liked is higher than they need to be effective, the company will lose money. Simple and just simple and clear. Because a sales professional is in a rejection business. The sales professional needs to qualify really, really hard. And if the sales professional comes in to get his emotional needs met, basically what's happening is they're getting strung along by the prospect. It's just not, there's no equal business stature. All right. Number three, fear of rejection. How well does a salesperson deal with the word no? Here's the thing. In sales, the word no is more apparent than the word yes. And if a sales professional is not comfortable with the word no, should go and look for another job. Right? I personally believe that no is the most powerful word. And I teach my clients and I teach the salespeople that I work with, leadership I work with, to go for the no first and then start to sell. The human brain has 70,000 thoughts a day. 87% of those are negative. So we're actually more negative than positive. And those negative thoughts are yesterday's thoughts. It's what we call baggage or reoccurring negative thoughts. And so if our prospects, our buyers, our clients think that way, we have to be comfortable with the word no, because it's only natural to say what? No. Oh, okay, great. Now it's over. Let's start to sell. Fair? And so I think that is a huge component, fear of rejection. And if a sales professional is not aware of these elements, then his chances of being really successful are slim. All right, that's number three. Number four, professional visitors. These guys are always busy, always on the phone, always giving demos, always doing this, that, and the other, always busy, 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 but they're closing very little business. We call them professional visitors. Don't know if anyone, that sounds familiar to anyone out there. And finally, emotional composure. That's the last one, what we call happy ears. You'll have a prospect. He won't be qualified. He won't have pain. He won't have money. He won't be able to make a decision. You're not even able to say the word yes. Okay. He has absolutely no power in his company. All right. Has no money. He has no problem. But the sales professional thinks that he's hearing a yes. And so what he does is he keeps him in his funnel. And stalks him, for lack of a better word, because what he thinks he hears is a yes, when actually there's absolutely nothing. There's no deal. There's no pain. There's no money. Everyone knows it. The prospect knows it. The salesperson's manager knows it. The salesperson's wife knows it. The neighbors know it. The team know it. The CEO knows it. The shareholders know it. The whole freaking world knows it, apart from one guy. You know who that is? Or girl? Salesperson. Which brings me to predictability of success. And when it comes to sales, predictability of success is what counts. And this is the essence of real training. And we talked a little bit about sales training and methodology. This right now is the difference between anyone out there that thinks that they're a sales trainer or you know, come and put together something or you know, read a couple of books and just think they figured it out. The essence of predictability of success in sales goes down to three main areas. One, belief. What is that sales professional? How strong is that belief system of his? Their money concept, their belief of success, their belief of their roles, and so on. Two, behaviors. And three, baggage. Now, I got a lot of companies, I do a lot of hiring help for the companies I work with. They always talk to me and say, James, can you look at this person? You can get an interview. And you know, many times they bring me a CV. CV's got, this guy's great. He's got 15 years of experience. And you know, I look at the CV, I maybe even talk to the guy. I say to the sales manager, I say, look, I don't think this guy has 15 years of experience. And they're like, what do you mean? So, well, what I think I see here is he's got 1 year of experience 15 times over. And basically what's happening, they're going from role to role and just dumping this baggage that they're accumulating. And that's why sales professionals get burnt out. But companies still hire them because they hope that that something will be different. The sales professional hopes that something will be different than the company they've been hired in. And the company they've hired will hope that the sales professional will bring in something that someone else doesn't have. And guess what? Hope is not a strategy. Which brings me to the last point, and that's ego. And bringing us all kind of back to the sales training and sales performance and methodology and all this stuff, ego is super important when it comes to predictability. Why? If someone's ego is too high, they won't want to learn new things. They won't want to try new things. If someone's ego is too low, they can't learn new things. They can't try new things. So won't versus can't when it comes to ego is an important thing. It needs to be right in the middle. And I'm sure we've met people that we thought had a huge ego when in fact they actually had a very small one, but it looks the same, it feels the same. And we also struggle with our egos. We're only human beings. We're human beings. Our brain has been designed not for 2022. Our brain is designed for 20,000, 30,000, maybe 50,000 years ago. It is designed to survive, not to succeed. And so until we can understand that and we can be open from a leadership perspective to understand and accept the science behind sales, it'll be very difficult for us to build a very strong and powerful team that will drive companies forward. There are companies out there that are doing it. They have realized this stuff, but again, it all goes back to leadership. Leadership has to be involved. They have to own it. They have to understand it and have to be comfortable with those changes.
Awesome. Fantastic. So I guess this is really helpful for anyone hiring or also thinking about what they need to do to get to the next step. I love the survivor thing. Talks about that, and I think it's been a while since I read it, but Sapiens, just how, like, why do we love sugar? Or why, you know, because it's what we thought we'd have for the next 4 days. So we just eat everything we see. So absolutely. I heard something recently, and I think you would be perfect at answering this. And he told me, he's a sales guy. He said, I wish like my manager or my management understood sales. He's like, your friend, they know sales, but my management doesn't know sales. I had no idea what that means. I still don't know. And obviously you don't know the company or the person or the human, but if you heard a salesperson with lots of years of experience that isn't one of those jumpers, but has some experience, what would that mean to you? And what would that mean to you? And
I think they're right. It's leadership don't know sales. I mean, you got a lot of business owners out there that have got wonderful businesses. They've built good businesses. If we're looking at the tech scene, a lot of startups, founders have come up with a great idea. Great idea. Yes, absolutely, 100%. Their ideas are awesome and they're making the world a better place, but they don't know how to sell. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what we find is they have their idea of good sales is getting people on a Zoom and just showing them. And when they're doing that, what they're doing is they're driving those prospects away instead of bringing them in. And I'm going to go back to the brain part. I do a lot of neuroscience training. So I talk a lot about how the brain works and how we align our brains with the brains of our prospects. And our brain is basically built of three main areas when it comes to selling and buying. The first areas are the prefrontal cortex. It's the youngest part of the brain. It's the front part. It's very young. It's only 200,000 years old in evolution. It runs at a speed of 42 bytes per second. So it processes data at 42 bytes per second. The second area of the brain is the limbic system. It's the emotional part. It has an amygdala in it. The amygdala is a gland that is emotionally triggered. So that area of the brain is emotionally triggered completely. No, it has no language. And it's connected, by the way, directly to the gut. So if you guys get in a gut feeling at any point, you can't really put your finger on it, that's why. And you know, it's about 20, 25 million years old in evolution, and it runs and it processes data at a rate of 42 million bytes per second, way faster than the rational brain. And finally, the reptilian brain, it's the survival brain, 200 million years old in evolution, the monkey brain, the dinosaur brain, the crocodile brain. And that's our survival brain. Fight, flight, and freeze, that's where that comes from. And so think a little bit about a sales scenario where a leader says, Mr. Salesperson, just get on, you know, give them a demo, show them how wonderful our tool is. They'll have to buy it because it just makes sense because it's beautiful. It's our baby. And, you know, sales guy says, okay, my boss, I'll do it. And he goes on and he doesn't understand why people are coming on. He's shoving information down their throat, but their brain can't process it because it works very slow. And so in fact, what's happening is that prospect is basically getting pushed by all this data. It's burning their cells out. And they're saying that looks, and they won't say it like that. They say, well, that was wonderful. Send me information and we'll get back to you, simply because they can't process it well enough. And so what happens eventually is the company's becoming emotional because they need to sell, so they're pushing more. And the other side, right, they're getting all this data, which they don't even know how to process yet. And so at the end of the day, until leadership understand the science and the psychology of sales, they'll continue making this very basic mistake that's costing them time, it's costing them money, and it's costing them rapid growth. And so, yeah, I think that's something that a lot of leaders don't understand.
How do you resolve that? Meaning it's obviously emotional, right? So it's not so easy to get someone to change something like that.
Exactly. People buy emotionally. They only justify the decision intellectually. And salespeople have to stop selling emotionally. And how do you do it? It's a process. As I said, I'm in the behavioral change business, right? I mean, at the end of the day, if we want to learn a new skill and we want to be good at something, we have to practice, even if it's a mental game. And so I think if you look out at a lot of good sales companies that have good sales culture, they realize that it's a behavioral game, that mindset is important, and always maintaining strong and cutting edge technique is key. So understanding that is a necessity in the organization, the moment they understand they're willing to invest time, money, resources, access to the right people in a strong sales function, then they will see good results and success. But until they think that sales is something, sales is basically the oxygen tank of the business, and no one's really investing in it in the real way. They're buying systems and tools and technology, but that's not solving the core issue, which is there's a sales professional, we are sales professionals, we are emotional creatures, and we need to know how to control our emotion and work out of our rational. And the way we do that is with a methodology. It's a process that keeps us safe.
Absolutely. For the RevOps professionals that are listening to this podcast, what can you tell them on how they can support the sales function the best way? Meaning, think about it like this. RevOps gets a lot of requests from sales, like, oh, add this field or do this thing for me. This is what I need in Salesforce, et cetera. What would be the top two or three strategic things RevOps could do for their sales team that would actually help sales accelerate sales?
Great question. I think the number one thing that needs to happen, I'm going to say this. There are a few things that need to happen. Number one would be qualification. Qualification is key. Most companies qualify easy and then close. It's hard for them to close the deal. Everyone's a prospect. Anyone can buy, right? And then the way they close them is by giving them a discount. That's not selling. That's wimping out. And so strong qualification, understanding that the systems need to support strong qualification steps. And if anyone's aware or knows the standard selling system, and understand the way the qualification process works, there are extremely powerful and extremely important questions that need to be answered. And I think another thing is they're not really aware of how to qualify well enough. So if I ask company, sales professionals or even, RevOps, what is your flow with regards to lead to client? I mean, how do you define what a lead is? And they don't scratch their head. Lead is a name and a number. And then it turns into what? A suspect, not even a prospect yet. Right? I mean, you got someone on the phone asking you a ton of questions, right? The buyer's asking us a ton of questions. They're trying to get free consultation right now. I need to figure out what's going on here. And so they're just a suspect. And until we've been able to ask at least 75% of our questions, they remain a suspect until which they become a prospect after we've gotten 75% of our questions answered. And then we get 95% of our questions answered, they become a qualified prospect. And once we get 100% of our questions answered, they become a closable prospect, not even a client yet. And I think that is, in essence, right now, it's that whole qualification. And the way we do that, another thing I think is required is, and this goes for managers too, but I think what I see a lot is that most sales professionals are not pre-call planning at all. There's no pre-call planning and no call debriefing. So strong for good professionals, they pre-call plan before, and they debrief after the call. And there's none of that happening either. It's not in the CRM. It's not in the systems. It's just like, let's make the dialer work and hope that something will fall into our net, or hope that something will fall out of the sky out of the website. And then, marketing get the pressure and all this other stuff. When in fact, sales professionals should be good at filling up the top of their funnel. I mean, let's pretend, marketing can't come to work for a week. What do you do then? no more business. I don't get it. And also sales professionals, if they are compensated and they want to make money and they've got that winner mindset, they always find ways to bring in new leads. Mm-hmm. Professionals know how to do it. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that's for any, I guess, B2B SaaS or enterprise or anything.
I think that's true for any company at all. I mean, any type of B2B company, any strong, good sales professional, if they're sitting around doing nothing, there's a problem. There's a productivity problem. And that's another thing we can talk about is productivity and accountability. So there's just, you know.
There's a lot of sales topics.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about, literally we could have like three different podcasts, it seems. One thing I wanted to talk about was discounts. You mentioned that a few times in this call or in this podcast. I wanted to go deeper into discounts. Your thoughts on discounts. I already got some of your thoughts on it or emotions on it. I would love to hear more about discounts. When to use them, when not to use them. Are people using them effectively?
What's a discount? I don't know what that is. I never heard of it. I haven't heard of it in years and don't give them. I'm sorry. I don't teach that either. So I can't help you there. Sorry. I don't teach people discounts.
So no discounts.
Right. Yeah, no. Guys, here's the thing. Never give anything away for free. Always get something of equal or more value in return.
Okay. Wow. Okay, cool. Love that. And all right. So let me do rapid fire on other things. I like the things. So discounts we just did. I'm trying to think of sales writing notes. What's your opinion on that? Like if you go into Salesforce, there are no notes. Is that bad? Is that good?
Yeah. So again, that, you know, clearly we need our notes. David Snyder, the founder of the Snyder Selling System, one of his rules and key to success, and there are a bunch out there, was always make sure you're taking good notes. Always make sure you're taking good notes. We're only human. And we can't even, you know, I mean, we can't remember stuff. And there are some key issues and key elements. And again, I'm going to go back to the most important stuff is make sure you're taking the right notes about your qualification. You know, it's not the surface pain they're bringing. It's the real compelling reasons for that problem to be happening that you're solving. And you gotta make sure you're taking those notes. That information must come onto a scope, or even if you send a proposal, which by the way, I don't send proposals, and I teach companies not to send proposals too much, but to do it in a different, more method in order to gain the business and not to lose the business. But in order to put it on that proposal, on that scope, budget. I mean, how comfortable are they talking about money? And a lot of sales professionals don't really do that. And then they kind of do it really kind of high level, don't take the right notes about it. And then that conversation about money gets stuck, and then they're stuck in some kind of a negotiation where they're getting annihilated because, you know, numbers weren't brought up properly. Another thing is decision makers and I don't know if we're talking a lot of tech companies, I'm sure there are a lot of champions out there. And here's the thing. And I don't know if anyone sells and likes to use the whole champion platform, which is okay, I guess. I mean, you need someone in there to help you. I don't even like the word champion. I mean, champion is someone who's won something, right? I mean, why would you give someone a medal before they've ever done anything? So, but that's another conversation. In order for someone to be a champion for White Knight, I would say that two things need to happen. One, that person needs to want you to win as a salesperson. And two, that person needs to have access to power and money in the organization. If those two things are not happening, the chances of helping, in fact, getting him to help you close the deal are very, very slim. And those are two important elements. If you're not able to maintain good notes on a long process to drive champions and drive that information, just make sure you've got the right information the whole time, then again, I think that's a miss. And then here's another thing. I mean, prospects are not very honest with salespeople. I mean, right? So why not make sure you got your right notes so that you're able to double check and make sure that you know they're not playing us around too much, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sales velocity. How important is sales velocity?
Driving opportunities through the funnel with sufficient velocity. Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, like speed to close, from quote to close, from beginning.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Again, I think that's another. I think that's another thing that most companies are not aware of. They don't know how many calls it takes to close a deal, or how many calls it should take to close a deal. And what they're doing is they're basically hoping that the prospect will lead the process, when in fact it's them that needs to lead the process. At Sana, we have a method called upfront contract. It's a way we get business closed quite fast. The way we work is we're constantly driving decisions along the way. So if we decide that in our sales process, it's a 2-call close, a 3-call close, or even maybe a 4-call close, it is a 4-call close or a 3-call close or a 2-call close. There's no more of this stuff going on. But if a sales professional isn't willing and able, all right, not only able, also willing and able to communicate that at the beginning of a sales process, they will get strung along. They will get strung along, and then just more fluff in the funnel. And so, yeah, I'm a huge believer of driving opportunities through the funnel with sufficient velocity towards a close. Also, a no, by the way, is fine by me. I love no's. That's okay. You get a no, you save time, right? You learn a lesson. You get a referral. You sell beyond the no. I like to go for the no, and then you start to sell. Fair? I mean, oh, here's another thing. And for any of you guys, anyone listening to this and know me, you know I teach this. I will not take no from someone who cannot say the word yes to me. You got to make sure they can say the word yes. They can say the word yes. Find the person who can't say the word yes. But that is part of your velocity. And if no one can say the word yes, close the file, let me move on, get someone else. I mean, that's the game. It's sales is a scavenger hunt. It's what it is. It's sifting.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. James? I think we could, maybe we even should do 3 more podcasts together, but this was really fun. I really appreciate it. And if anyone is listening and they would like to use some of your services or have any questions for you, what's the best way to reach for them?
First of all, I apologize if I offended anybody on this, I'm not here to say what people want to hear. I'm here to say what people need to hear. And if you want to reach out, you can find me on LinkedIn, look, James Abraham Center Training Israel, or linkedin.com/JamesTrainer. You can check out my website. It's israel.sandler.com. I'm in Israel. Everyone knows me. Reach out. Let's have a conversation. Always happy to expand my network. Don't know if we can work together, but always happy to have a conversation and get to know each other. And if I can support anyone else on the network as well, an introduction, a referral to anyone I know, and support them. If someone's looking for work, if someone's looking for sales professionals, if someone's looking for management stuff, just let me know. I'm happy to support you.
That's awesome. All right. Well, James, thanks a lot. And we'll be in touch.
Good selling, guys. Take care.
Yeah.